Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Sunday. This is an emergency edition of the Peristyle Podcast. We are driving down the 5 freeway coming from Santa Clara, where USC lost to Stanford in the Pac-12 championship game in convincing fashion. I'm with Dan Weber, USCfootball.com beat writer and columnist. A lot of people writing in about the team and what was going on, so we wanted to do an emergency podcast. This doesn't get more emergency than this, Dan. We're on the road, on the freeway, recording this as we go. We got a few hours to kill, so we thought, hey, why don't we just start talking some Trojan football, full-on emergency. You know, you get the big earthquake in L.A., power's out for a while. You have to dig into that emergency box of yours, eat some cold Spam, and opening up bottles of water, and trying to use that multi-tool that you've never taken out of the package, all that kind of stuff. This is about as big of an emergency as it gets. We apologize, there's no introduction. We're not going to take any questions. The audio quality might not be that great because we're recording on my phone as we're driving down the freeway, but we wanted to give you guys a little something about what we thought of the game. And so I'm here sitting next to Dan Weber as we're driving down the freeway. What's up, Dan? How are you, man?
When we run into USC fans, as we have along the way, they all want to know what the heck's going on, what's going to happen, how's this going to turn out, and not that we absolutely know, but we've got some thoughts about it, and we know from your correspondence already the thoughts that a lot of you guys have, so that's kind of where we're going to go with this, and see where we end up.
Yeah, so fully behind the curtain, we recorded one of these and the audio quality was pretty terrible, so we're trying it again. So we did this whole kind of podcast for about an hour already, but we got many hours on the freeway, so we're going to try it off again. We kind of split it up. We're not going to take any questions. We'll split it up to like offense, defense, special teams, coaching stuff. We want to talk in some pregame stuff because you have the all-century team for the Pac-12, and just kind of like what the experience was like, not only driving up here, but just what it was like at Levi Stadium and stuff. So maybe we'll start with that, Dan. We both drove up on Saturday morning early, driving back on Sunday, but neither of us had been to Levi Stadium before. I think there's some really cool stuff and some different stuff, I guess, about it.
Yeah, it was pretty much a USC kind of a deal. Obviously, you're driving up and you're seeing a lot of USC guys, but as we got to Levi Stadium, the last few blocks, you got USC people, coming in. You get into this really bad parking lot, unless you have a Tesla, and you get to park within 100 feet of the media gate for the charging station, if you can find it. But USC fans dominated in the tailgate. I mean, they were there early. I know that, people were thinking half the stadium was USC. It was impressive. It was the kind of thing that, you have to feel good about if you're a USC. Until the game started, it was something to really, feel good about from a USC point of view. As far as the Levi Stadium, the best thing about it is the fact that there were so many USC guys there on the all-century team. And, seeing the, Marcus Allen and Ronnie Lott, the defensive player of the century, and J.K. McKay there to accept the award for the coach of the century, and his dad, John McKay. You really had a sense, this is a USC deal, that you got going here, and Marcus Allen was there, and Joey Branner, and Ron Yeary, and just a lot of reminders of, what made USC football great, and then, Reggie Bush, comes by and goes to the locker room. He wasn't listed among previewed who was going to be there, but he was invited, by the Pac-12 networks to be there. Apparently went into the locker room on his own. Whether that's still legit or not, it's something that, USC's been willing to actually fight the NCAA over, the kind of the lifetime ban that they placed on Reggie. Of all the people in the history of college sports, he's the guy banned for the lifetime. I mean, it's just...
makes no sense.
It's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's typical NCAA, but worse than because it's USC. So how that's going to play out, I don't know. I think it was probably another distraction. The players got all excited with, Reggie being there, and then went out and played the least exciting half of football that we've seen at USC in a long, long, long time. So I'm not sure, that worked out all that well. But it was kind of a USC day. or two, and that's where the game's going to be next year and the year after. And again, Stanford's won three of those. Chances they'll be there next year, even without Kevin Hogan. But McCaffrey will be back. And if you wanted to have Saturday a tribute to Reggie Bush, Christian McCaffrey and his number 5 that he wears in honor of Reggie Bush was the guy. He was spectacular. And again, to remind you, he and Hogan were so good that it reminded you of the days when USC had those kinds of players in their backfield. And that's probably what it's going to take to have that happen again.
So for Levi Stadium, I think overall it was an interesting experience. But, you know, it wasn't that full. The announced attendance was like 55,000 people or something like that. We know there was a lot of people having issues kind of getting into the stadium. And this is on a Saturday. Every other year, when Fox has the game, they have it on a Friday, which is going to be even tougher. I don't know if the Pac-12 should go to the home field kind of thing as opposed to this. Or maybe do a Los Angeles one when they get a NFL kind of stadium there. I'm not sure if this is the future, having it something like Levi Stadium.
Yeah, certainly not Friday night. But again, I think Larry Scott had a press conference before the game, and he basically said, hey, you know, we get you a little bit more money from the network so they can do whatever the hell they want. Yeah. If they want to schedule, you know, 33% of the games as late night games, well, that's... And he pretty much said, you know, hey, you guys told me to try to get as much money as I could, so that's the only way I can do it. And I know you don't like it that they're televising 2 or 3 games at the same time, and the Pac-12 probably gets short shrift when that happens. But, you know, he's pretty much saying there's nothing they can do about it. And they're going to talk to him, but they have no ability to do or say anything. And on a year like this year, that really is... probably has some impact when people, you know, east of the Mississippi have no idea who Christian McCaffrey is. The idea that this guy who broke Barry Sanders' all-around yardage record, you know, one of the records that people didn't think would ever be broken this year, a guy who, has 2 games this year where he ran, you know, rushed for 100 yards and caught more than 100 yards in passes. He's got 2. The whole rest of college football has 2. And yet, you're hearing on ESPN last night, Danny Cannell, like, who is this guy? You know, or gee whiz, kind of a late arriver. No, he's not. Late meaning late night, that nobody knows who he is. But for him to not even be an absolute lock to be in New York is ridiculous. I mean, but it shows the Pac-12 will now be the Power 5 conference. There are the Power 5 conference. It isn't making, you know, the 4-team playoffs. And, you know, when you're the commissioner of the Pac-12, you come in and say, this was a historically good year. You know, 5 top 10 teams, 10 bowl eligible teams. Larry, there's no one in the college football playoffs. You know, don't give us this stuff about, you know, we're historically deep or historically good. You know, and you know, the Pac-12 keeps playing 9 games and a championship game, 9 conference games and a championship game, shooting itself in both feet.
Right.
And why do they do that? Because they all want to play in L.A. every other year. Or they want to play in L.A. every year, basically, that they get either USC or UCLA, because they have to come there to recruit. So, you know, they don't, and I always thought this was interesting, they didn't care if they cost USC a shot at the playoffs or at the BCS, because they wanted to be able to recruit in L.A., and now it's coming back to bite them and bite everybody in the conference, because there's nobody makes the playoffs. But it's been kind of the selfish short-sightedness of the Pac-12 that has put them in this place as well.
So we wanted to break down the game, the 3 different aspects, offense, defense, special teams. We want to talk about the coaching, and we'll talk about, like, the future with the bowl game and everything just being announced as we're driving down the 5 freeway coming back from Santa Clara, going back to Los Angeles, where we'll find out when we're going to cover bowl practices, all that kind of stuff. But offensively, for USC, a lot of heat put on the defense, but really, you know, 3 points in the first half, Dan, bad-looking 2-minute drills, throughout the season, not alone just in this game. The passing game has really regressed, and having only like a Ronald Jones only get 5 touches, there was a lot of problems, I think, on the offensive side of the ball for USC.
Yeah, I mean, when you gain 80 yards in the first half, when Christian McCaffrey has 255 all-purpose yards in the first half, and USC has 80 yards of offense, that's a problem. And when you have whatever it was, 38 yards rushing and 42 passing and 45 in penalties, really, I was laughing because I was kidding about how many penalties would they get before the game started. They almost did get penalties before the game started. I mean, I don't know, the ball was snapped either side of the ball, and they had a penalty. And, those were earned. I mean, probably you couldn't be any worse prepared than that team was. And whether you say, oh, no, they did it right, it just didn't happen. No. They were not prepared to execute at the level they had to execute to win that game. They weren't prepared to play at the level that Oregon was playing 2 weeks ago. They weren't prepared to play at the level that Stanford played. Now, you can say, yeah, but we're better than UCLA. Yeah, they're going the wrong way. I mean, and they've got issues there. But if that's what you want, fine. And USC might be able, to beat. And I know you can say, well, we'll beat Washington next year. Yeah, maybe you will. But what about Stanford and what about Oregon? I mean, I think that's obviously, when Stanford became good, they targeted USC, Jim Harbaugh, and said, we're going to be as good as USC. We're going to beat USC. USC has to target Oregon and target Stanford. And right now, that's clearly not happening. They didn't look like they knew who Christian McCaffrey was. I mean, it was like, what offense can, Stanford really run that's going to beat you if Christian McCaffrey doesn't run it? And yet, basically, did they do anything? Did they pay any attention to Christian McCaffrey? No. And if he's their offense, why don't you just look at that and say, well, Stanford knows what their offense is and what they have to do to beat you. What about USC? Don't they know who their offense is? Well, one play they do, and Ronald Jones got a 27-yard touchdown. Remember the next other plays that he got a chance to do that? Well, no, I guess not. I can't quite remember those plays. And the reason you can't is they didn't happen. they didn't happen. And it's, if you're going to be a run-first team, you can't jump off sides. You cannot, get false starts. You can't have bad snaps. You can't do it. And if you're going to do it, you can't be a run-first team because you're always going to be, second and 11. Now what do you do? So just really badly prepared. The offensive, wide receivers, obviously, Juju's not close to 100%. Steven Mitchell's not close to 100%. The guys who are don't get any shot in the game. And you end up, the tight ends don't get a shot. One of the big plays of the game, they try to throw the ball to the quarterback. It was just a hodgepodge of not what you needed to do, and pretty sad.
Very grab-backy, I guess, on the offensive side of the ball. And, I think one thing that worked last week, Dan, was that they kind of went to more power formations where you had fullbacks in there and Cody was under center. They seemed to get away from that. I think they only did it once or twice in the whole game. I don't know what the rationale kind of behind that was.
Well, and the one time they did it, they ran play action pass. They did get a touchdown to, Jaleel Pitter. I mean, it's kind of sad when you have to run play action off power to the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
But that's what they did, and it worked, and they got a touchdown. But to me, that's almost still grab baggy. You'll take it. But this was not a well-oiled machine. This was not a team that, can't wait to get the ball and line up and do what we do best, and you would say to them, and what would that be? That best that you do. And I don't know that they can tell you. I don't know. What is the best? What play would you want to see? And, the game starts with Cody sprinting right, 18 yards, and throwing the ball 20 yards for a 1 yard completion. And you think, what the hell is that? What's going on here? I mean, Stanford isn't going to let you do anything to them on the sidelines. I mean, haven't they proven that over the years? That they're going to knock you around? They're not going to miss the tackles? They're not going to let you block them? I mean, they don't have great speed and great athletes, but they got guys who will take the right angle,
like we said, the offense had left a lot to be desired in that game. Thought they played really aggressive against UCLA, and I think, you know, talking to some of the guys in the locker room afterwards, it seemed like they backed off that a little bit. Not as much man, not as much blitzing. What did you think about what went?
Yeah, and I think this is the thing you worry about, is that Jesse will make a decision not to do something because they're afraid of what might happen. And I think in the Stanford case, they're afraid. If you play man, and you got guys trailing receivers, what if Hogan decides, I'm going to scramble on this play? And Hogan takes off running, and you got your secondary guys running down the field with their backs to the line of scrimmage, and here's Hogan running right up behind them. And I know that's, you know, one of the negatives about, you know, playing man against a quarterback as athletic as he is, except for the fact that USC can't play any other way. They're not any good playing any other way. They have horrific breakdowns when they play the other way. So you're not giving up anything. If you looked at the completed passes that killed USC, how often were they defended? How often was somebody anywhere near, Hogan when he caught the touchdown pass from McCaffrey? McCaffrey, when he caught that 67-yard backbreaker that, got Stanford back, the lead back sitting there after. All of those things, USC doesn't defend very well. And if you give Stanford the ability to control the clock and push the ball down the field, which USC did by just sitting there and waiting and just getting, knocked off the line of scrimmage and not penetrating and not taking chances and not trying to play on the Stanford side of the line of scrimmage and not trying to, make Hogan uncomfortable. I mean, they talk about, this is two games now where they talk about trying to make him uncomfortable. I can't imagine. What are they talking about? Throwing something from the sidelines? I mean, nothing they're doing on the field is making Hogan uncomfortable. And it doesn't look like it even remotely is designed to make him uncomfortable. I mean, I can't even guess. What would you guys be doing that would make him uncomfortable in this defense? How would that work? There's no answer. But, they did, get themselves going a little bit in the third quarter, and they didn't give up that, second touchdown on the, blindside hit on Cody in the strip and a stupid score. So, they might, the USC defense, to some extent, may take, a bum rap. They're not put in position, to be successful much of the time. And, one of the things that's interesting is when Stanford's receivers so often catch the ball, there's nobody that close. How often did USC have somebody wide open in a passing game? I mean, is that Stanford that much better in their secondary, or is that the design of the passing game? It makes you wonder.
It does.
Did Stanford, did USC have an easy catch the whole game? I can't remember. And when they maybe a couple of chances to have one, the ball get sailed over somebody's head, and it just all around offense, defense, one plays into the other, and neither were anywhere nearly good enough.
Well, 2 weeks ago we saw against Oregon, Vernon Adams looks like a Heisman candidate, throws for 6 touchdowns. No one's ever done that against USC before. And then, so he sets records. Christian McCaffrey gets the triple-triple with, more than 100 yards rushing, more than 100 yards receiving, and more than 100 yards in the return game. They make him look like a Heisman candidate, and he actually is a Heisman candidate. And maybe USC helped him get it, at least get to New York. I think USC gets an assist on that. But, I mean, how can you be that bad against a quarterback 1 week and then a running back the next week and not really have a plan to slow that person down?
Yeah, I got the sense after the game that the USC kids wanted to get Christian McCaffrey's autograph. I mean, it was pretty strikingly, sad. And it wasn't because, he was all they had. I mean, they made Christian, they made Kevin Hogan look about as good as he didn't need to throw the ball very much. But, he threw a touchdown pass, caught a touchdown pass, and ran for a touchdown, the same as McCaffrey. And to have that happen,
two players.
I mean, it's only happened once each of the last 2 years. Only one guy in college football has accomplished that in 2014 and 2013. And here USC gives up two of those, two different Cardinal guys in the same game, in the championship game of the Pac-12. That's just unacceptable. That's ridiculous. And then USC tries to run the same kind of, tailback, quarterback, throwback, and they got no shot at working up. I mean, Stanford's open by, 12 yards, and USC runs it, and they're not open by 12 inches. They're not open by, 12 centimeters when they try to throw it back to Kobe. And it's just on that two-point play. So, couldn't look any more ill-prepared, any more ready to play, any more with a good idea of exactly how you're going to win this game. It looked like you're out there hoping something good happens, and as we said over and over again, it's not a cliche. Hope is not a plan.
Yeah.
It really isn't. And for USC fans and for this team, that may be all they've got right now.
On the special team side, I don't want to go too much into it, but just, what did you think? I mean, I thought that was a point of emphasis, I guess, for Clay Helton, that they wanted it because it was terrible against Oregon. It's been terrible in other games. I thought they played pretty good against UCLA, but kind of slipped back again with some gaffes and just not.
Yeah, I think Chris Alvarado had a pretty good day punting the ball. I think coverage was they did a pretty good job on coverage, kickoff. I mean, I think they, you couldn't focus on the fact that that's Christian McCaffrey back there returning punts and kickoffs. I thought both of those they were definitely acceptable. The fact that they get a the numbers are that for Stanford's extra point kicker Conrad Ucapina, he's got 67 straight now. Pretty good job. That's kind of how you want to do it if you're a good team. And for USC's Alex Wood, he's got one in a row after getting the first one blocked in this game. And that's just another example. The early plays that don't look like they're going anywhere, the early penalties, then you finally come back, you get a score, you're fired up, it's going to be 13-10, and then you get a block, and now it's 13-9, and that actually really matters. 13-10 is one, and then 13-9 is a whole different story. It's those kinds of breakdowns that are just unacceptable at the level USC is at. And yet we've seen them, game after game, year after year. You don't know where they're coming, but it's the kind of thing that would make guys not trust one another and say, gosh, I don't know if, maybe I need to do more. They so often say, no, you got to just do your job and trust everybody else. But the way they've done this over the years, it's hard to trust the rest of the players to do their job. So often they don't.
One last thing on the special teams, Dan. Really, I thought it was one of the bigger plays of the game, and it was a special teams gaffe. So USC takes the lead. Stanford comes down and takes the lead back and kicks off to USC. And looks like Adoree Jackson's going to field around the five, and Justin Davis comes over and basically cuts in front of Adoree, catches it. Adoree knocks him down, so basically you tackle yourself on the five, and there's a penalty on the play. So USC starts off at their 2.5-yard line. They actually moved the ball a little bit, but they were starting such a hole. Cody gets the sack, fumble, scoop, score, and game's over. I don't know if that happens if you don't have to start from your own 2.5-yard line, but what did you think about that play?
Well, to be honest, I've tried to wipe that play out of my memory. That's like so many bad things at once. Just the thought that someone on the USC team would run backwards sideways to cut in front of Adoree is just crazy. I mean, it's just, what you hope for is that he gets a shorter kickoff at the five,
yeah,
right in the middle of the field. So now you're tracking the ball down and you run into him and you fall down and then you get a penalty on the play on top of that. I mean, that's just poor coaching, yeah, poor preparation, poor every. There's nothing about that says anything good. I mean, that's just.
And, Stanford doesn't do a play like that, and that's a play that could really doom. USC was on the comeback, and they're not good enough, I think, to overcome big mistakes when they're on a comeback trail. And that was a huge mistake. There's no way they could overcome it.
Yeah, not with this offense now. I mean, Stanford can, basically try to pin you back and keep coming, and as they did, and take shots at Cody, and knowing that. Well, than they were. They're physical, and they do some things that make it hard on you. But he said, we knew that, you know, there would be a point where we'd have to be the one that made the game turning plays. And they did. And they had that sense of, you know, that'll be there for us. But it wouldn't have been there had USC not cooperated with that. And, yeah, that's one of those ones. There's so much wrong with that play, you really don't even want to think about it. Because that, you know, what are they doing in practice that Justin Davis would ever think that he's supposed to go back and field that kickoff? I mean, did he think, you know, Adoree had left the field? I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for, that 5-yard line ball in the middle of the field that gives Adoree a chance to go, you know, either way.
Well, let's talk about the coaching aspect for the last part of the podcast. It's just, it was a really weird week leading up to this game. Obviously, I don't think USC handled it well. We talked about the timing of the announcement. I get if you wanted Clay Helton, but to announce him on Monday, 5 days before the Pac-12 championship, I don't think he did anybody any favors by doing that. You're talking Tuesday of practice of a distraction because Helton's named the coach. You bring the victory bell in, people are still talking about the UCLA game up until Thursday. It just seemed like the way this was handled leading up to the Pac-12 championship game was terrible and probably exactly the polar opposite of what Stanford was doing leading up to the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, I guarantee you there were not those kinds of distractions. And when I know people would say, but it's USC football. There have to be distractions. Nobody knows what the hell they're doing from week to week. Disaster could be happening. You got to put out fires. You don't know how the coaching search went. Then when it, you know, is revealed what exactly happened, nobody's very happy about how it happened, even if they like Clay. So you've got all of that going. You don't have a lot of focus on the first ever, you know, championship, Pac-12 championship game for USC. And then you get a, you know, that kind of a one-sided loss that is absolutely the last thing you wanted to come out of that game. And, you know, that you end the season on two, you know, routes in the final 3 weeks. That, you know, if you think that UCLA game was something you can hang your hat on, maybe not. You know, that's not, you know, and USC, and one of the reasons we said this is not the great, great, big, big rivalry, is USC shouldn't be hanging its hat on how it does against UCLA. You know, you want to be at, how do you do against Stanford? How do you do against Oregon? How do you do against next year Alabama? You know, you can't hang your hat on the UCLA game. You got to beat UCLA and move on. That's what Stanford does. You know, Stanford beats them and moves on. Oregon beats them and moves on. USC has to do that exact same thing. But with all the factors that went into last week, they really couldn't. I mean, obviously, you haven't beaten them in 3 years. That makes it kind of a big deal. And then you hire a permanent new head coach that for no reason that anybody can discern. Now, obviously, if you look at it now, would this coming Monday, would they still be naming Clay Helton as head coach? As much as you say, well, it didn't matter, the UCLA game, that didn't change anybody's thinking. Would this game have changed anybody's thinking?
Yeah.
I'm guessing they probably would not be naming him on Monday of this week. And did they know that? You know, are they thinking, gosh, we better do it now.
Otherwise, people will be happy with it, yeah.
While we can, you know, we'll get a week out of this, and we'll look good until, you know, poor President McGee is standing on the sidelines with the chairman of the Board of Trustees. And at the end of that game, at least they were there.
Yeah.
And they had to, you know, but the looks on their faces were not like, wow, we did the right thing this week.
Yeah, I mean, I really do feel like it was Clay Helton's stock was an all-time high. That's the one they wanted, so let's name him now. Not doing yourself any favors by doing that, not giving yourself the best chance to win the Pac-12 championship game. But it would be a lot harder to float that boat on Monday, tomorrow, as opposed to last Monday coming off the win over UCLA. And I don't think that's right, but I think the problem is a lot of the people that were like kind of on the fence, but you beat UCLA, they're like, yeah, let's give Clay Helton a chance. A lot of those people, I think, have switched back, and they're like, well, why did you name him? Like, you know, at that point, it's a really weird spot. There was a rush this hire. If you wanted him, fine, but I think you could have waited and you could have done it in a better way. You just, it's like you botched the hire game. again, even if you got the right guy.
Well, there was no upside to doing it this way, and that's the problem. And there's no upside for Clay other than he's got the job and a, you know, 5-year contract, we're told. Now he's got some serious pressure going into the bowl game. Even though it's a game, USC's going to be favored in this bowl game. And they better play like it. And they better, you know, get... one of the things that happens now is, if they get a late enough bowl game and they get the 15 practices, I mean, basically, that's an extra spring practice. Now, who do they do it with? This current coaching staff? We all think this staff is going to be significantly different by the spring. Do you try to make those adjustments now so that you get 2 spring practices out of the new, the new coaching staff, and you, make it so if you didn't think we were changing things around here, go through, the bowl practice, go through spring practice. You're going to know things are different. And Clay's got no other way to show that than hiring and firing, something he's never done, and then conducting. And here's, one of the problems for Clay is he's had the last 6 years under coaches who a lot of people didn't think were very good game week preparation coaches. We're not coaches, we're coaches who came in after one of the best game week preparation coaches in the history of football, Pete Carroll. One of the coaches who, when you came and watched your first few practices, you said, wow, he's doing things to get them up to game tempo and game speed that you hadn't seen other people do, and the competitiveness of practices and the pressure that they practice under and the ability to translate that directly to the game each week. And now you've got basically, and you can justify to some extent with they were, saddled with NCAA sanctions and not as many scholarships and all that. But you've got, Clay, maybe at times thinks we really are ready. This team is ready to go. But, the evidence is, certainly in 2 of the last 3 weeks, and the fact that in all 8 games he's coached this year, they've been behind at the end of the first quarter. And is that, a function of not, really being, challenged in practice or not challenged enough in practice? Or, what is it? I mean, is this, they were kind of doing NFL-style practices under the previous 2 head coaches by the end of the year. And is that not what you do if you're USC? I don't know. Did Stanford, for example, not practice in pants the last 5 or 6 weeks? I don't know. I'm guessing they probably did. But, and if they're not, they're doing it really right. But USC's not doing it. Not practicing under enough pressure that allows them to come out and play the way you need them to play to start every game. And that's got to change.
It does. And I'm having a hard time picturing. So now we know it's going to be the Holiday Bowl against Wisconsin. December 30th, I believe, is the day. So you got some time, like you said. There's going to be a bunch of time to have practice between now and then. Just seeing the way USC has done business, Dan, I don't see them making staff changes until after the bowl game. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but my gut feeling's telling me I don't see it happening.
I mean, and that's the kind of thing, if you want people to be excited about this program now, if you want those people who made the trip to Santa Clara, if you want those people who were, all bought in after the UCLA game, to get back on the bandwagon, you probably got to do a number of things, you've only got a couple of shots, and I don't care what you do in the winter workouts, nobody's going to pay attention there. So what do you have to do? You got 15 practices, an extra spring to get ready for the Holiday Bowl, if that's the way it goes, and that's the one real plus of that Holiday Bowl. And you've got 15 practices in the spring, and so you got double spring practices. So for a coach who had to pick up the team in the middle of the season, this is a big break and a big plus. But you're not going to do it with the staff that's not going to be here. How do you do that? I think that's and do you have the kind of administrative support to figure that out? And how do you figure out, recruiting those guys and bringing them in and the legalities if they're somewhere important thing in the world. Do you think Nick Saban would sit back in this situation and say, you know what, we can just let this go. We'll get it, you know, and we'll get it in spring. No! No! Urban Meyer, no! So you make it really, really, really important. And we'll see if it's important enough or not. Or will they just kind of say, well, I know most of these guys aren't going to be here, but it wouldn't be very nice to, you know, tell them to take a walk at this point. So I think, you know, there are some opportunities, and there are some opportunities that can be missed. And we'll see which way they go. But it could send a message to the team, to the fans, to everybody, and to the administration if you have to bring them on board. And you have to explain to them, this is why we have to do what we're going to do right now and make it happen. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. We'll wrap up our emergency on the 5 Freeway podcast. Hopefully this one turns out a little better. I think I published the other one, so I apologize if you guys couldn't hear that. That's why we're taping a second one. But thanks very much for tuning in. We'll have more podcasts, of course, this week. We just felt, we'll just spend the time driving on the freeway, talking to you guys a little about some USC football. So hope you guys enjoyed our Emergency Sunday Parastyle podcast. We'll be back this week with a bunch more. Check out USCfootball.com for all the information.